Good morning, Canton.
Good morning, Canton.
Good morning, Canton.
Revolution Radio is occupying the airwaves once again, and today we have quite a few special guests and such, and so be ready for a good one. T. Nelly, tell you what, you are you have been instrumental in bringing our friends here today. So I was wondering if maybe you could do a little bit of an introduction for us.
Absolutely, we've got the tour of duty, Occupy the Roads. We've got we're using real names, so we've got Diane, Janet, and Micah. They've been to, what was it? I told you guys I was going to quiz you guys today. It's like 135 cities in the United States. So.
Ooh.
They could tell us all about the occupations that they've been to, and
that beats my record by 100.
I think that beats my record by 130. That's sad, I know. No.
Really excited to have them here to give a little bit of hope back to Canton.
Well, good. Well, we're glad we're here. We're gonna take advantage of the fact that they're here for basically. Start talking about several different topics that are the ones that are being ignored in the presidential debates and in the general discourse as it is. And so, we're glad you're tuning in so that we can actually talk about issues that matter to people rather than the, shall we say, useless tripe that we get on mainstream media. So.
Yes, we will definitely be reporting and discussing things that the mainstream media will not be. I just like to say, too, I think it's, we've taken a little break, us as Revolution Radio, and it's good to be back. You know, it's good to be back in the studio, and I love that the fact that we're kicking it off with some gnarly people that have been around the country right now that, for those that are listening, who will be listening, I told our individuals that came today, this time is also their time as well as much as ours. We are all a collective here. We are all pushing for the essentially, the same things. And I'm pretty proud, to be in the same room with some of these people here. Honestly, you guys are very committed and obviously show that from, traveling for the 130 occupations you've been to already. It's, that's great. And just respect the hell out of you guys for being here and appreciate it.
All right. So enough of our babble for a second. Let's actually hear from our wonderful guests. So let's see, who wants to?
How it started?
Yeah, please.
Absolutely.
Do. Please. Tell us a little bit about how Occupy the Roads and all the different things that the three of you represent kind of came about and where your journey's taken you and where we are now.
Okay, well, almost a year ago, November 4th will be 1 year that Occupy the Roads has been on the roads, and it started after I went to Zuccotti Park on October 2nd. And so that was the day after 700 people were arrested. And I happened to be in Detroit, and I heard it on the radio, and I said to my aunt, who I was visiting, I'm going to New York. So I did, and it was life-changing, because to see that number of people come together finally, when we had all been thinking something's terribly wrong, and things weren't working, and I saw this girl holding a sign that said, I'm not crazy, there are people like me. And it was just amazing. So I knew then I was going to... The plan was to get an old bus, which I couldn't get, and that's another story, but I ended up with this RV at great cost, and so I started out November 4th. Started up in, I'd gone to Vancouver, B.C. before I even started, so I went to Vancouver, B.C., and then Everett, and then Seattle, and then all the way down the West Coast, across the bottom. We occupied Congress, we occupied New York City, where they put the Bradley Manning graphics on the RV. There's WikiLeaks, support Bradley Manning. And then left there and then just continued around. I took a bunch of people from New York with me. And we've been touring ever since, 135 cities, 22,000 plus miles, and across the country three times now.
Wow.
We have occupied Oakland Port Shutdown. We've occupied NATO. We've occupied Jackson, Mississippi. We've been right down
you
to
were
Coconut
in Oakland.
Grove.
Yeah.
Yes,
Oakland Port.
That's
fantastic.
Gives you goosebumps when you see that many people come around a corner. I happened to be lucky enough to park right up where the media were. Nobody bothered me. It was on the curb, and then this mass of people just came around the corner. It was amazing. So, yeah, we've been to pretty well every major event. And then I was contacted. We were donated a property in Pueblo, Colorado, and we now have an Occu House in Pueblo with my good friends in Pueblo are working hard on the communities come together in an area that's very boarded up. And I encourage people to do that here. Find places that are boarded up and write to the people. We're a 501c3, so if they want the tax write-off, they can donate their property. So we were working there, and the Occupy Armed Forces contacted me and said, hey, we'd like to tour with you. And so anyway, that's how I got the RV revved back up, came across the country, and we went to New York. And it was a veterans memorial that they were at, a Vietnam Veterans Memorial Plaza in New York City. And the Vets for Peace were doing a tribute to the people that had fallen in the wars. And that night, unfortunately, and sad for me to say, that 25 vets were arrested. And it was a sad day for America when you see an 85-year-old who had served this country taken away in plastic handcuffs by the NYPD. I was in disbelief. But the nice thing that happened that night was I met Micah, and Micah has served. I'll let him tell you his story, but it was amazing. But when I got to New York, the plan was I have here Diane from Maine, who has also served in the Army, and that's why we call this tour the Tour of Duty. And so I will let both of them talk about their experiences, but that's how the RV got here. And we are now in Canton, Ohio.
Yay. Canton, Ohio!
Yay.
Yes, thank you for something.
All right, so Micah, let's hear your end of things.
I met Janet in the Veterans for Peace rally in New York City. That was the second time that I spoke with the Veterans for Peace. The first time was in Freedom for Bradley Manning Plaza in Washington, D.C., where I came out as AWOL. I served four combat tours, 5 years in the Army, and I was in Afghanistan when Bin Laden was killed. Not long after that, over 30 people had been killed in a single attack, and while I was standing for over 2.5 hours in the cold, salute held high, I couldn't help but wonder why these men had died and why we were still fighting. Because everyone that we blamed for 9/11 was either dead or in jail. And that was pretty much where I decided on my descent, but I couldn't enact it yet. It just wasn't right. It wasn't ready yet. I didn't have everything I wanted to say. So I thought on it for another year, and I made plans and I made preparations. And then when I came back from my fourth tour, just about 2.5 months ago, I left my post in Fort Bragg and started occupying. I marched against Spectra Pipeline. I was there for S-17 in New York City for their one-year anniversary, K Street's one-year anniversary in D.C. I came out at Freedom Plaza that month as an AWOL soldier, and then spoke at the Veterans for Peace rally that night. I was at my 30-day mark, which would have made me a deserter had I not come back to the military that night, so instead of getting arrested, I turned myself into Fort Hamilton in New York City. They actually turned me away. They said they didn't have the people to process me, so they told me to come back the next day, which I did. I came back to Fort Hamilton again to turn myself in, and they turned me away again because it was Columbus Day, and they just didn't feel like it. So I contacted my attorney, and he told me that because they had taken me in and there was plenty of evidence of it, that I had another 30 days legally AWOL. And so I called Janet, who I met the night before, and started our tour of duty, which is our duty to dissent, is our duty to speak out against this war, because there's no justification. There's no reason that our brothers and sisters should be dying. There's no reason their children should go to sleep afraid every night of the next drone attack or the next boot being knocking down their door. Right? It's not just the physical wounds that hurt our soldiers, it's the mental ones. 17 veterans kill themselves every week. It's because of the lack of support that they get from the people and from the VA, and it's traumatizing.
I had heard that more veterans have died from suicide than have died in actual military action in Afghanistan. Is that true?
That was true of last year and this year. It's not true overall, but yes, more service members have taken their own lives during the last 2 years than the enemy have. It's because I'm 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But a veteran of four combat tours.
Yeah, you've been through a lot already for 24 years of existence in this world, like going through that many, you know,
that long, the amount of duty you've already served our country in a short period of time, that's a lot and can be obviously overwhelming. But like, I'm a little aware of, you know, how frequently the transition back into civilian life too, even suffering from PTSD, you know, and how frequent that is upon individuals who have served for us. And they're just, I wish there was more out there for individuals like you to help you segue back into the real world.
Well, the great thing about my segue into the real world was coming into a family, which was the Occupy family. People supported me, they believed in me, and they gave me hope, not just for myself, but for humanity. As they say, we are unstoppable, a better world is possible.
Well, you know, hearing you, it brings me back a year ago. A year ago, I was in Occupy Chicago, and I had the great pleasure of meeting Rory Fanning, who was I can't remember exactly which special ops, but he served with. I'm terrible with names all of a sudden. The famous Arizona Cardinals football player.
Oh, Pat Tillman.
Pat Tillman.
Oh yeah,
he served with Pat
story too.
And he had served with him, and he knew what happened.
Army
he knew
Rangers,
him very well.
Rangers, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so. And he had come back and to the States, and he had done this march across the country to raise money for the Pat Tillman Foundation, all this other stuff. And he is currently one of the very, very active occupiers in Chicago, and an incredible human being. And like I said, I had the great pleasure of spending a good couple days with him. But hearing you and what you're saying, it just brings me back to Rory, and Rory, if you're out there, you know, I miss you, man, and so hopefully we can get back together soon. You know, it sounds so similar. The experience, I mean, it almost verbatim, it almost sounds like you're mirroring each other's comments and feelings and thoughts, and it's really quite striking. I mean, I went right back to you know, my time with Rory when I was listening to you there just a moment ago. It was really something.
I couldn't help but, real quick, I couldn't help but think of one of our also fellow comrades locally here, Jim, you know, and his experiences
in Vietnam
are strikingly similar, you know. It's the kind of the same thing. You know, what are we at war for? What are we fighting for? And then the coming back to America into civilian life, too, it's the same kind of struggle. That's immediately what I thought of, too. But, yeah. Anybody else would like to share at this point as far as well, go ahead.
Good morning, camp.
Hey!
This is Diane with Occupy the Roads. I am a veteran of the Army, 22 years. I am an occupier in Maine, tried and convicted.
Maine.
Yeah, Maine. Sorry, I don't put that on, sorry. But I can if you want. Anyway, I've been active in the Occupy movement for over a year. We started our own encampment in the capital of Augusta, Maine, on the 15th of October. I've been to New York, Zuccotti Park, and several other occupies as well. And I am glad to be in Canton. And there are so many issues. What do you start with first? Overwhelming. In fact, that's probably part of the reason why we don't have more people occupying, because many people are overwhelmed. We've got the job situation, we've got no health care, we've got no housing, we've got foreclosures, and the military-industrial complex running Congress. So where do we start? We got to get more people empowered and involved. And I see that as the number one mission. As impassioned as we are, as much as we care, as dedicated as we are not going to be able to accomplish this mission unless more people join us and speak out and demand responsibility from our elected officials. And if they're not going to serve the people, then they will go, and the people will run this country. Get the damn corporations out of Congress, put the people back in charge, and build local economies, bring industry back into this country, and make us strong again.
Hallelujah, sister.
Yes.
All right.
Wham!
No, that's how we roll.
Slam dunk there. I mean, I can't disagree with anything that you just said.
And ultimately, that's what the Occupy movement's been about from the get-go. It's been about
money out of politics, essentially, right?
Getting regular people to stand up and take what's rightfully ours in a country that supposedly values democratic values.
Even down to the unalienable rights for me anymore. You know, it's not even just the Constitution. When you're infringing on everything that's supposed to be guaranteed as a human being, period, you know, when you're starting to impact that, then we got a real serious problem here. You know, it's the granted respect that we have in between coexisting human beings.
So, all right, so, yeah, please.
I just want to sort of give a feeling. When we go around the nation, it's disturbing that people don't know what's going on. This is the biggest thing I find. It's that people don't even know who Bradley Manning is.
Exactly.
We're educating people. This is what we do. We talk to hundreds, if not thousands, of people. Whether it's at a rest stop, a gas station, wherever, we're parked in a mall, we get people coming up going, what are you about? We need to educate people. It's not being covered on mainstream media, so they don't know what's going on. And so we can't criticize that they don't understand because they're not getting the information.
And I think
thank you to you guys for doing this kind of show.
Yes.
We need this.
Well, thank you.
We need
thank
more
you.
Of it.
You know, this is our little way. Like, it's been tough around here, you know, to be honest, all of us, to keep morale up. You know, to keep hope up around here, especially with I love the word the scent that you used, that oil and gas is, you know, right, knocking on our doorstep right now, too. And it's amazing how many people even around here don't know the reality of what we're getting ourselves into as far as fracking. You know, you want to talk about people who are unaware of world. I mean, this is in our local community, and I'll tell you what, they do a really good job of convincing people that it's just going to solve the problem. You know, it's just going to fix a lot of stuff around here, and we're trying like hell to tell them otherwise. And not to mention, you know, the renewables, the progressive, the renewable energy that's already out there. You know, that other countries are utilizing.
I have a brother-in-law who works for one of the companies, and what came out of his mouth, and he's very, you know, we speak very candidly about a lot of things, but he knows, you know, where I am and everything like that. But basically what he said was that, hey, if there's a $70,000 a year paycheck to it, they can punch a hole anywhere they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, and that's the mentality I mean, it's not just education. It's also an entrenched mentality. But I don't want to get too far into that.
No,
I want to take advantage of the fact that we have these folks here. And so let's take now that we kind of have a bit of an introduction for everybody, we're just going to go ahead and take a quick music break here in a second, and then we're going to come right back, and we're going to start a roundtable discussion about a great many things here. I have a few questions for all three of you. So,
absolutely.
So we'll start going from here.
This is Revolution Radio on RadioFreeCanton.net. You can find us on 90.7 FM and on Twitter, Revolution Radio with a Zero, and Tumblr.
Water and fashion our very own wishes.
And we're back.
Welcome little, back, guys.
Little City in Color this morning for you. And we have our special guest here in the studio from Occupy the Roads. What were you calling it? It's your tour of duty. That's correct.
So,
go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I'm really interested in hearing like some of the experiences that you've had on the roads, what you feel the temperature of the country is right now, and you know, where are we headed? I mean, of course, we have like this election coming up, and everything seems to be drowned out, and we keep on hearing about more than less meaningless stuff. We only hear from two of our candidates as opposed to the other four that are out there that are really working, that are like on ballots across the country, and so please.
Well, you asked about the temperature right now of the Occupy movement. And I'd say that the media has gone to, the mainstream media that is, has gone to great lengths to try and marginalize this movement. They've tried to make it seem like we're just a bunch of bums and hippies and that we don't know what we're talking about. But, you know, we've been around parts of the, you know, a good portion of the country. And I can tell you that, you know, average people know that something is wrong, even if they don't know quite what yet. It takes information from us. This is a revolution of human interaction. You know, this is a person-to-person information network. You know, it's not going to... The revolution will not be televised, but it will be live-streamed and blogged and Facebooked and Twittered. That's where you got to get your information from, is from other people, because they're the ones that are listening. Mainstream media isn't going to tell you. But this revolution is strong, and it's worldwide. It's not going anywhere.
It is worldwide. I actually had the opportunity to spend some time with Occupy Mexico City. Which is rather amazing. Yo soy 132.
Yo soy 132.
we talked about that before, but that was really an incredible event that happened just before the Mexican elections. That still didn't turn out very well, but the voices were definitely heard. It was rather amazing. Sorry.
I was going to say just a brief synopsis of what I saw out there. When I first started out, especially young people, they were saying, you know, we're not voting. We don't believe in the system anymore. It's corrupt. They had a lot of hope in Obama, and they voted him in. There were 10 million students that got behind him. And so I started to panic and think, what's going to happen to this country if people just decide not to vote? So I was kind of, you have to vote. But then as I toured, I thought, it really is broken. I mean, there's, you know, it's hard to understand and figure out how we get control back. And so I still believe that we have to fire Congress. I think the only shot we have is to get all new people in who aren't tied to money and to corporations. And even when I say that, they say, wow, they're good people when they start out, and then they get in and they get corrupt. But I still think there are good people. I've met a lot of good people. So, you know, we have a disillusioned population right now, those that know what's going on and those that don't. And then there's my neighbor who's 70 years old who said, where do we go to get information? Because they're not internet savvy, so they depend on the media. That's why it's so important, shows like yours, radio shows, wherever we can get information out, that's what's going to be important for the future of this country. And we especially, we went to the University of Akron yesterday or the day before and doing outreach there and found a lot of people didn't really know what was going on or weren't concerned. And I said, well, the debt is your concern. You're going to carry it. It's your...
Absolutely.
And I got to tell you, Akron's been a strange anomaly. I mean, Akron, yes, in so many ways, it has the
so
potential,
much potential
to be this amazing thing, but, they, but there's like this donut hole in Northeast Ohio.
It died. You know, we've even talked about... You know, like converging all, like Cleveland, Youngstown, all these other smaller encampments that are still alive, you know, that still have a pulse. But if we all centralized it at Akron, we could, you know, there's a lot of potential there. We've talked about it many times, you know, but yeah, it goes to show you this sense of apathy that seems to be in Ohio. We talk about it a lot. It seems to be a reoccurring theme, though.
So what are some of your impressions from the road, Diane?
Yes, Diane. Okay. I say there's so many things, but to just grab at one and say what needs to happen in the beginning for to set up a cascade effect so that all the rest that needs to happen can happen is getting the money out of politics. The corporations are ruling this country now. There's astronomical figures spent on political campaigns. Nobody that cares about the people and cares about our welfare first is running because they can't afford it. And to raise that kind of money, you'd be spending all your time raising money. I think what's essential is to have public financing, to have every single candidate run on a flat budget, and to not allow anyone to run unless they are not publicly financed. Have a 6-week, maybe 8-week campaign, maximum. They spend, maybe at least a third of their terms running for office again and fundraising.
Exactly.
And it's obscene. I think we need to be...
I think Romney spent the last 4 years.
Absolutely.
Well, we have a gentleman here in the state of Ohio named Josh Mandel who's left his post at Treasurer to just campaign. He just stopped doing his job just so he could get reelected or be sent to...
Fire him.
Well, okay. Well, now here's the...
Well, it's between him and Brown. You know, there are two, you know, candidates. And, you know, locally even, there's a local radio show called the Ron Ponder in the Morning. We love what he does. And he's also a registered Republican, but Mr. Mandel seemed to even push him away. You know, it's a very, very odd scenario that we have here. The people that were trying to his running slogan is, you know, change Washington. You got to change the people that we send there. I think he'd just be joining the collective, and you know, it would just be around amongst the people that.
Right. When you come into Northeast Ohio, you come into you're going through the looking glass. I mean, Democrats are Republicans. Republicans are fascists, and it's crazy, right?
You know, Plutarchs, whatever you want to call them, or plutocrats. I'm sorry, yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, with the big, huge debates and stuff, I mean, we haven't seen anything, again, unless, you know, we had, what is it, Democracy Now! Actually showing the debates going on at the same time. I mean, why does it have to come down to a Democracy Now! Showing...
Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein responding to the same questions.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, why not have them all together? That's kind of like, because nobody's going to see them. So it's truly not fair how the system works. I mean, just
by the way,
a free plug, just
because we're on this right now, October 23rd online. I can't remember what the web address is. We'll throw it on the Facebook page. There's going to be a debate between the Constitution Party candidate Gary Johnson of the Libertarians, right. Rocky Anderson of the Justice Party, and Jill Stein of the Green Party. So at least tune into that. At least there's an opportunity to hear like some other ideas that are out there, or actually have addressed, you know, issues that are addressed that are of actual importance. You know, not so much about, you know, binders and who's from Kenya.
I'd say about our current political system, just as it stands, it's really good that we're having, you know, independent candidates doing their own debates. But as a demographics game, it's just impossible for anyone to get elected except for the main two parties because of the millions or billions of dollars that it takes to get elected. But it is really important as a movement, as a people, to recognize that voting is one of the most powerful tools that we have. And I would suggest that if you're so fed up with the system that you don't want to vote, to go to the polls anyway, to check that box for another candidate, and to write nobody in it, to take a picture and post it online so that you can participate in the electoral process and let your voice be heard that you do not believe in it at all.
I agree. I think, like Diane said, a publicly funded election, because we pay, as people of this country, for the mistakes that are made. So it might be better for us to pay for the elections, have a total of 8 weeks, and then just be done with it. That was reverberated around the country. People are tired of the negative commercials. They are so fed up with the whole system. It's just amazing. You don't even have... Nobody in the whole year I have been campaigning about Occupy the Roads has said, what party are you with? They don't care. They don't ask. The two-party system is to divide the country and pit one against the other. There shouldn't be any parties. You should run on what you can do for this country and let the people decide if you're capable of being the president. And we have run into a lot of candidates who've tried to run and couldn't because they didn't have money.
Right. Now, I had an opportunity last year to visit an awful lot of encampments, and it was fantastic. I always heard a lot of great ideas that were out there. And so one thing I know is that the Occupy movement is very rich in ideas. Now, the thing is that, yes, it would be fantastic to have a public-funded, election system, eight-week cycle, stuff like that. We got rid of political parties, all these other things. There's all these great ideas where if they were instantly implemented, everything would be fixed. The question is, and I think the question that a lot of people have, is that how do we get to there from here?
Not a lot of people know this, but if you can get two-thirds of the vote of a state, you can overturn pretty well anything you want. So two-thirds of the people have a right. So I think maybe we start with petitioning. Or, if we can have a better election for 2016, it would be, I think, uplifting to a lot of people to see some hope. People, what the thing is, if I approach in the deep south, there were five guys standing around a cooler, and I was a little hesitant because I thought, oh dear, I'm in this deep south, and the cop in Mobile, Alabama just said to me, you're going to ruffle a lot of feathers down here with that Bradley Manning WikiLeaks thing. But I went up to them and I said, hey, do you think there's too much money in politics? And they all said, damn right, I think you should fire the whole lot of them. People get it. They know it's not working. Congress is not working for us. It doesn't matter who the president is. We don't have a Congress who's there for the people right now because they're dilly-dallying and competing with one another.
I know, but isn't it like such a strange, thing, though? It's like, Congress has like a 14% approval rating, yet 80 to 90% of them are going to be reelected. What accounts for that, and how does that get changed? I mean, a lot of it is about gerrymandering. A lot of it's about a bunch of different things, but... please, Diane, you look like you had something to say.
Absolutely. Whoop, is this on?
Yeah.
You're good. Okay, thank you. I say, Janet alluded to it earlier, there are two ways to amend the Constitution, and two-thirds of the state legislatures, can call for a constitutional amendment, and then it still takes the three-quarters to ratify. But we don't have to wait on Congress to do this. We can step up and organize state by state, and I think we need to start doing that now. No time to waste.
Now, I agree with you, but I'll take my home state of Utah, for instance. Okay, the state legislature can do that, but as wacky as the people are in Washington, they're twice as wacky in the state legislature. And I can say the same thing for Ohio.
Right.
Yeah. So, Mr. Kasich, indeed, he's just been nothing but, I can't think of one thing that he's tried to cram down our throats, if he hasn't already, that's been in the benefit of the majority of the people.
Right.
And show me one.
So once again, I see we get to this. So state legislature, okay, so we're running into another brick wall there. Now, city council here in Canton has been sort of like the one place where we've been able to actually get some traction. We're actually able to meet with city council people. We have many very good city council people in Canton, and there are many that are worthless too.
One thing that they do, sometimes there are even our city council hands are tied, so they send us, you got to go to the state. That's what, they've told us that. How many times have they told us, we cannot deal with that issue. You have to go to the state. And there's people already at the state level, and they're still out there fighting. So, at that point, what do we do? We're just this one little city here. We're at the heart of Ohio, and another thing I wanted to touch base on is, my right to vote. It took 80 years for my right to vote. I'm a woman, and it took me a long time. If I choose not to vote, it's a big smack in their face, and I cannot imagine putting my, I don't want to lose my vote. And, it took us a long time to have that right. And I'm not going to give that up, But when you're divided between the Republicans and the Democrats, I mean, even though, I mean, it just really sucks. I mean, that's the only two parties that are actually out there. Go ahead.
Just one quick, and then I'll hand it over. In Maine, my home state, we are very fortunate to have strong municipal rule. The towns, town government, we have town hall meetings. We decide what we're going to do, our budgets, everything. We have very little county government, so it's town and then state. And because we have the ability to pass laws that are going to impact all of the citizens in our town, we have a lot more capability, and we are organizing to do it. This past round in the springtime of this year, I helped organize with Move to Amend. There's an organization, it's a coalition actually of many politically active and progressive groups to move to amend the Constitution. And what we're doing is passing resolutions that talk about specifically getting the money out of politics, repealing Citizens United, and establishing by statute that corporations are not people. And if we can do that town by town, we can compel our state legislature to pass a similar resolution, and we can encourage all of our fellow states to do the same thing and just start a movement. If one state sees another state doing it and said, if they can do it, so can I, we can just start a domino effect.
See, you would think here in Ohio that would be the case because Vermont was the first state to ban fracking, but here it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. That's Vermont. This is Ohio. We're going to be safer even regardless if no accidents have occurred.
Even though they have,
and they've swept them under the rug already. We've lost a 19-year-old young man
in North Canton.
So
where
are you in Maine?
Yeah, that was actually reported by Ron Ponder. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there were people that sent emails into his show, and he said, "Well, you heard it here first." He also asked if the person was maybe sober or not at that early in the morning too, and that's the rhetoric that we still have here today. You know, but you know, for us to seriously think that it's not possible for earthquakes to occur here. You know, there was 11 in Youngstown last year alone. How is it not possible? That's the stuff we're talking about, you know.
Now,
there's still this – what did Mr. Fisher say? He said there's a democratic deficit is what he likes to use.
Yes.
Right.
Like there's this area of like where, you know, we're talking and talking and talking, but we can talk and talk all we want, but we also have to have somebody that's willing to listen to us too. And that's – you know, that's part of the process.
Well, that's where citizens' participation came in.
Yeah.
Comes in. I mean – you know, the whole like a fracking ordinance that was poised to go through. You know, basically the mayor wanted to have carte blanche ability to lease city-owned land for fracking,
which would have been our parks.
That just would have been apocalyptic, I believe. And the thing is that we were able to organize an awful lot of people to go to city council, to go to the city council and speak out about it. In fact, for two council meetings in a row, we broke records for the amount of people speaking at city council. And so, I mean, getting people motivated to do something is huge, and that's our key. Now, just one little quick thing, because I want to get your response on this.
Before you finish that thought, but then can you just briefly explain what fracking is to those who don't know exactly what this process is, real quickly?
Hydraulic fracturing is a technology used to break up shell formations deep underground. It's been it's been done vertically for quite some time. However, and so that's why you hear like all the politicians say, "Oh, we've been doing it for 60 years, so it's all safe." However, hydraulic fracturing that goes horizontal is a very new technology, and in a lot of ways unproven. And because of the nature of the technology, it requires pumping a cocktail of incredibly horrible pathogenic and carcinogenic chemicals and such into water in order to facilitate the fracturing process. And of course the big issue there is the migration of not only methane but also the fracking fluids into the aquifers
and so forth. Do with the water, the million millions of gallons after the fact. You can't contaminate this stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Great. Okay.
The one quick thing that I wanted to get a response on from the three of you is on the issue of local control. Local control, especially in conjunction with fracking in Ohio, has been a big issue. And one of the things that the state has done is that it has pulled local control on anything having to do with hydraulic fracturing and natural gas exploration from the cities and towns. Now, a lot of cities and towns in Northeast Ohio, you know, like Youngstown and Mansfield, has really been doing a good job, and a couple other places have been working really hard. And can we have a decent track record of fighting against certain things? And so there's a sense that the cities are getting some movement, and maybe there's like a future, you know, there. But
We have some townships around here that have banned it already. That surround Canton. That's what's just so stinking odd. You know, we have Plain Township, we have Hartville. You know, right. North Canton passed a resolution. Can't even pass a resolution
Bans are toothless, and so that's the issue. When local control is taken away from the state level, I mean, I cannot tell you how jealous I am of Maine that they have that brand of local control. So anyway, just as far as like go ahead.
I was just going to say something about the fracking, because I was down in El Paso where they don't have a lot of clean water. And they were fracking there, and they were protesting there. Then I went to D.C., and because I am involved in the clean energy, I work for a clean energy company out of Switzerland. That's what I do on the road. So I got to go to a session there that the fracking people put on, and everything was, you know, to the best of our knowledge, there's nothing that's unsafe about this, and to the best of our knowledge. So they were protecting themselves the whole way through this conference. But I had just left El Paso, so I knew what the pumping of gallons and gallons of water, well, at highest pressure, filled with chemicals, is doing. It's not going to stay in one place. And so Colorado are huge, big time out there, because they have 50,000 fracking wells in Colorado. Why do we need this many? And do you know that the gas that they're pulling out isn't staying here? It's going to China. So we have
France
a lot of people who are paying attention. One gentleman, I'm going to issue a shout out to Chris up in Kalamazoo, who went to an auction and bought land with no money to stop and do his civil disobedience. And he's being reprimanded. And so I say, we need to just do whatever it takes. And when there's people like him out there doing that, because fracking is going to ruin the Great Lakes water.
St. DeChristopher in Utah did that.
Yes, yes. He's just about to get out of prison in December.
I met him last year at Power Shift. He's phenomenal.
I protested against fracking in New York City. Right now they're building a pipeline from Pennsylvania to New York. It was disturbing to me just because of the complete disregard for humans. I was at a children's playground where children were playing in the water and bathing in the water from the aquifer right next to it. And literally while we're protesting, engineers were lowering pipes right next to the playground. It was the 2-year anniversary of an explosion in California that killed 8 people and injured over 40, and this was only 4 blocks away from Union Square. So if a similar explosion happened, this is a pipeline with more pressure and with more radon, more radioactive gas. If it exploded that close to Union Square, there would be millions of deaths.
Can I just add one thing? Because we ran into somebody when we were just in Akron. A gentleman came up, and they were trying to buy his land, and thank God for people like him, because he was standing firm and not giving up his land for fracking, and we need more of that standing up. People, I don't think, understand the whole fracking thing, and they get around the laws because they get to do it as a trial basis, so they're not under the EPA.
Yeah, the Halliburton loophole is the most famous one, but there's so many that they can jump through. Well, go ahead, finish your thought first.
Well, I was going to say, the corruption seems to be in the entities that are supposed to be protecting us, okay? The utilities companies,
ODNR,
are another issue that we have going on in Pueblo, because they get to do what they want, the fracking. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, what happens with fracking is when something does go sideways, they pay off people who don't have a lot of money, wave $20,000 in front of them, which is a lot of money to somebody who has to work so hard at minimum wage. And they go away.
So I think that's, I just like to add one thing. I think that's why this is such a, you know, we always go back to it, but I think we can't help it sometimes for many different reasons. But upon all else, I always come to this conclusion that, you know, what are we going to do if we don't have water? You know, we can't protest anything. You know, we can't get out and, you know, we need water to live. We need water to survive. And it's a key essential resource that we just need to live, period. You know, and if we don't at least start standing up for that, you know, then it doesn't matter what we, you know, Citizens United, anything else. This is very, very, very important at the very same moment. But like, you know, Diane said earlier, that there's just, it's overwhelming. There's so much stuff we have to fix so fast, you know, and this is just another one.
And just allow me to quickly, one quick thing, to State Senator Olschlager, this is a quote from Mr. Olschlager.
Who lives in North Canton.
He said that we can't grant local control to the cities, because if they did, there wouldn't be any fracking.
Oh, yay.
Imagine
that. Okay, that's a slight paraphrase, but that's basically what he said. And it's like, well, yeah, what does that tell you? Mm. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Diane.
No, absolutely. For any of your listeners who are still wondering about the technical aspects and the impacts of fracking, I would suggest that they watch a documentary, a very powerful documentary by the name of Gasland, made by Josh Fox, who is a very strong individual. His mother is even involved in the movement. He's got the whole family enrolled. And as bad as fracking is, we've got multiple onslaughts onto our efforts to maintain clean water and breathable air. There's tar sands, which we've discussed. We're fighting it in Alberta. Maine. You know, you think, who to thunk it? Well, we have an old pipeline, World War II vintage, that's been carrying light sweet crude since World War II, from the port of Portland, our major city, up to Montreal, Canada. Well, there's being kept very quiet and covertly applying for reversal permits, because the big Enbridge pipeline that runs from Sarnia, Ontario to Montreal, Quebec, is in the final stages of getting reversal permits so they can carry tar sands oil. Doesn't take the old rocket scientist. I'd like to find him under a rock and smash him, but the rocket scientist realizes that from Montreal, they're going to send it straight down to Montreal, Portland-Montreal pipeline send it out the East Coast to other ports. They couldn't get it out the West Coast of Canada, so they're going to start sending it out the East Coast, and they've got an existing pipeline. They figure they're going to get grandfathered. They're going to be able to reverse the flow, and it's an old pipeline. It's leaked plenty of times, and it's not the heavy gauge, large diameter that is typical for carrying tar sands. So what the heck are they going to do when they start pumping highly corrosive, abrasive, it's like liquid sandpaper, and at high pressures to be able to get that stuff to maintain flow. And that runs by our major water source of the Sebago Lake, and we're done. We're done if they start pumping those tar sands through that. And then we've got mountaintop removal on top of that. So, yeah, we've got to get more people involved. We need to have more people active and demand. And we can't just say nicely, can you please? We've got to be occupying our places of lawmaking. Wisconsin showed us an example. They occupied their capital. I don't remember exactly how many days, but they were at it for a darn long time, and they came very close to recalling
Scott Walker,
their governor, absolutely. And we can all work at that. It's a travesty that people are told, you know, this business, in quotes, business of fracking industry that contaminates our water, mountaintop removal that contaminates air and water and ruins the countryside. Why we're told that's necessary for business. What happens when there's no clean air and no clean water? Where do the people go, you know?
That's exactly the logic and point that we bring up. Like, it doesn't matter. We have to have those to be able to survive and exist. And if we can't, then what do we do? You know, so that's why there's a sense of urgency. I think, at least locally here, we feel it, and obviously you do too. And it's very, very empowering to hear and inspiring other individuals who I've just met this morning that already know just as much, and if not more, about this terrible method of natural gas extraction. And not to mention too, again, I was just talking to Mr. Tricky Dick before the show started. You know, when you have countries like Spain that are doing what they're doing with renewables, and Germany doing what they're doing with renewables, Spain just set a record. 64% of their nation's energy was came from wind last month. They set a record worldwide. Like, they're completely shutting out. Like, coal is, like, about to just drop out completely in Spain now because wind is taking over. And that's what we need.
We actually have a turbine plant here in Ohio that's producing the turbine. So, I mean, they want to say that their jobs are just in fracking. Well, forget that. You know, we need to start concentrating on the green energy. Another thing I wanted to say was, just for the simple fact is, there's only two states, I believe, in the United States that has overabundance of water, and Ohio and Alaska being the two. You know, with them hitting us so hard, when every other state in the United States is going through a drought, you know, eventually they're going to be coming to Ohio. How are we?
Yeah, talk about a valuable resource.
How
exactly?
How are we as one state going to be the source of water for 50 states. Is like I
well,
know.
Well, they can have our fracking water.
Well, that's absolutely.
So, how much choice do we really have then? Kind of going to go in a different angle here for a second, but when both candidates are the main two candidates, when they both agree upon that we're going to, you know,
right.
we need natural gas, do we really have a choice anymore?
Let me add this, because we have a very corrupt commission, and which is the reason why we only have two elected officials showing, because we have, I think, 16 people running for the presidency, and then four really major ones, and that's the two that you mentioned, which is Jill Stein and
Rocky Anderson,
who aren't getting a voice. When they did the debates, there was a gentleman, Buddy Romer, I think, who said, get the money
yeah.
out of politics.
Yeah.
He didn't make it. So, but then I find out that the commission is actually run and bought and paid for by Bush Anheuser. The beer companies
yeah.
have bought our political system. Do you know that was the League of Women Voters that actually challenged a law or a rule that they tried to push through, got it stopped on the commission, and then it was reworded and snuck back through. That's why we only have two presidential people on the debate.
Right, right. And I'm sorry, it's just...
Sorry, I was just going to throw out there that, you know, we had another killing here in the Northeast End, like 2 nights ago or something. You know, something really needs to happen in our local community when it comes to the violence. Again, I mean, you guys hear me talk about this all the time. I would really like to get out there and, you know, get the people out of the houses and onto the streets. And I want us to keep doing this until, you know, the change is made.
Right.
You know, something that's going to be repetitive and let them know that we're not going away.
A lot of that happens by people thinking that they actually have a choice that is meaningful. And I think that a lot of the disenfranchisement has to do with the fact that people feel disenfranchised out of the fact that neither the Republican or the Democratic Party represents their views. And so when the debate commission basically does everything that it can with like some sense of legality at the same time to make it so that only the Democratic and Republican voices can be heard, the real choices that are out there are obstructed. I mean, because there is a viable Libertarian candidate if that's your flavor. There's a viable Constitution Party candidate if that's your flavor. Then of course there's the Green Party and the Justice Party, you know, that are out there. And if you read any of those platforms, any one of those platforms may better represent your worldview than that of the Republican Democratic Party, who by and large, it's like the main difference between them is like whether one's going to spend $600 million, you know, billion dollars on defense or a trillion. I mean, that's not a choice. I mean,
thank you.
I had an interest.
We talked a lot today about the evils in some of the institutions in our government. We've also talked about trying to be heard. I wanted to plug real quick that today at 12 o'clock at McKinley Monument, we will be having a general assembly.
Oh, is it 3:30?
The potluck is at 3:30.
Right.
General assembly at 12 o'clock. If you are listening right now and you would like to discuss what we can do in our local communities here in Canton, Ohio, and then how that ties into the grander American occupation and the global occupation, we will be there. You can meet and greet us. We are real people with real opinions, just like you.
Thank you. That's a very apropos plug, and let's do that again real soon here.
I was just going to address Tara's concern, because it is a big concern in a lot of cities, and that's the youth problem that we have. And I blame the education system, which is another whole topic we can get on, because we don't enhance what kids do well, and we don't keep them engaged, and we don't keep them in school. And therefore, we have them out on the streets trying to make money any way they can. And we've seen it in Newark and Detroit and Buffalo and now here. So unless we do something to change the school system, I don't think we're going to be able to change the mentality. Get them engaged. These are smart kids.
I think this is a good spot to take like a quick musical break too. Maybe we can come back with this issue, because this is a hot topic, you know, as far as, you know, the debates have been occurring. And, you know, one of the main cogs in the system that, you know, I think education is very important. You know, we need to enlighten, and that, I think that's one of the first steps, you know, to turn this thing around, is we have to educate first. So this is Revolution Radio, Radio Free Canton. .net is 90.7 FM, and we'll be right back after a quick musical break with some Fugees here for you.
becomes a warm cellar. Mommy, easy now, squeeze this summer. Test why cleft, see that flesh get scorned. So bad, make it feel like you ain't wanting to be born, John. Tell your friends, say the hell out of my lord. Chicken drawers, you can get yours, still in chicken from my form. Yeah, yeah. I'm not the dead kitchen. If you're my fiancés, then I'm bringing all his senses in. Nobody shoot me, my body's made a hand grenade. Girl bled to death while she was chunking in the razor blade. That sounds sick, maybe one day I'll write the horror. Black killer comes to the ghetto, Jackson Acura. Stevie Wonder sees crack babies becoming enemies in their own families. I'ma get them coming up when we soon done. Gun by my side just in case I got the rum. A boy on the side of Babylon trying to front like you're down with Mount Zion.
That's right.
Revolution Radio, back at you.
Yeah, yeah. Is Micah not coming back?
So,
there he is.
So we're going to be kicking back up here. We're going to be talking a little bit about education and then some solutions, basically. Some success stories that our guests have seen across the country and maybe help point the direction for us here in Canton to have even more successes than the ones that we've had. Because I have to say, I think that we've had a very good year around here as far as like you know, getting some things done, and so any inspiration to continue that trend will be great.
I'm very passionate about the issue of education. I think that was probably one of the first things that really just started making me look around, you know, and started becoming more aware, you know, without some special professors I had at Kent State, and just being curious on my own too, it's so important. You know, it's empowering. Knowledge is in fact power. You know, and but the less knowledge that there is, you know, or truth out there, you know, it's just an empowering feeling. But I think, you know, talking about education is so important from kindergarten all the way to, you know, PhD level, all of it. Like I said, though, it's between the amount of debt students are in and how much they charge today per semester, per year, when only a certain, you know, part of the population is going to be that can even afford an education today. It's a type of enslavement today. That's how I see it. You know, if only a certain part of the population could be truly educated, then what does that mean? Again, I would like to hear from some of our other guests too. You know, how, why, you know, anything and everything about education and why it's important to you, and what can we do about this mess that's, you know, enslaving the youth of America to the banks and the corporations, you know, et cetera.
Or creating conditions that are so desperate that we have killings in Canton, such as Teen LA's been speaking of.
Or when they get out, so, and the only jobs that are there are, you know, jobs that will contaminate our water.
So from the tour, let's kind of switch focus to education a little bit. What are some of the?
Well, I'm real big on today's solutions with institutions that already exist. Right now, there's an organization called Khan Academy, khanacademy.org. They have online videos that teach from 1+1, far past calculus, into realms of math that are at the highest of any college level. They also teach computer programming, chemistry, science, art, history, how to draw, and it's not just kids that look at independent education. This is a resource that's available to anyone, and the industries that we're talking about, like our ability to branch off from local industries like fracking, you know, local industries like that, anyone can learn and apply computer science and be successful in the real world. Anyone can learn and apply art, and these are resources that are available to us now in the real world, and it's just about doing it ourselves, taking the initiative to be self-reliant and to be self-educating.
Go ahead.
I know there are other universities that are starting to starting this shift. Like the one that sticks out in my mind is MIT. They're offering, you know, free online courses you can take. I don't know if it's everything, but they're minimally now. I think you're allowed to, you can participate in online up to everything, except you can't earn college credit. But if you want to, you know, if there's a course that sounds interesting to you, you can actually go and learn some things. You'll get a little certificate by the end of the semester if you just complete, you know, the work that's needed. But things like that, you know, I think better that than nothing at all at this point. But I know there are a few other universities that are starting to do this here. In the United States specifically, I just hope it catches on, and,
right,
and eventually it's. I'm glad to see, like, the technology is, you know, in that sense is opening up some doors.
The thing is, though, is that injustice in the education system, you know, which leads to social stratification, so on and so forth, begins in the primary and secondary levels, and that's where you know, since most of that is in the public sphere. That is a place where logically you'd think that there's a lot more potential to rectify and remedy some of the situations because it is public. So, you know, I mean, to unravel all the problems with public education, you know, is no mean trick. But what are some of the things that we've seen concerning primary and secondary education from around
the world? This is one topic that's near and dear to my heart because the education to me is so broken and so dedicated to created robots that will work for corporations. And so I talk to teachers across the country. I've done a lot of taping, so I have a lot of interviews done. And they teach to the test. And that's a problem that we have, because to me, a test is really just memory. Can you memorize this? Because I have met brilliant people who have designations behind their name who basically can't solve the most simple task. So it doesn't mean anything that you can pass a test, and I can attest to this too because I've worked with some of those people, but the teachers are fed up because they have prerequisites for classes, and I would say this was the most exciting to me. I got to UC Davis, and the band was parked outside, and this guy came up, and he said, well, you know, wanted to know what we were doing. So he said, we have a solutions group. Now, I hadn't heard of a solutions group before. I heard of a lot of groups that were taking and mentioning and you know, outing the problems, but there weren't many that were solution-based. And so we went to into a park, and we sat around, and we talked about the education system. And this gentleman turned out to be a UC Davis professor, and he said, I would teach science all day if I could teach to a group of kids that wanted to be there. So we have to stop having kids go through a curriculum that they don't enjoy and they don't like, and I think it would keep them in school. And I'll give you another example of teaching to the FCAT, which is this test that they do. We were in Tallahassee sitting, and this gentleman came up, and he was talking about how he wanted to play his guitar at school. Could he have music during lunch hour? And they wouldn't let him. First they said they had to fill out a form, then he had to belong to the music group, and it went on and on. But he started talking, and he was one of those kids that got taken out of the system and had to go work for somebody, so he didn't get to write this test because he wasn't... his grammar was a little bit slower than most people. And so, anyway, we got on the topic of starting talking about clean energy, and which is what I do. And he said, oh, gasification. He knew a gasification plant. He could build one. His IQ was 135, but he didn't get to write the test because his grammar wasn't where it should be. These are the kids that are falling through the cracks. This is why we have a problem. We expect a system that's easy for the teachers, so we put people through school that's designed to template everybody to come up with the same kind of mentality, but we're not capturing what kids do really well and keeping them engaged.
There is a GATE program out of Houston when I was growing up, and it was a school that was, I guess all of the local schools would go to this one school for a visit. It would be a week or two long stay. It would take you through different cultures. Each, they had the radio stations, they had broadcasting, all these different, I guess, privileged things that they don't have in normal schools. And if we had one setting where these kids could go and visit for 2 weeks to expose them for different cultures, to expose them to different programs that could be their future, you know, and it's a very inspiring to grow up in that. Now, I've never seen anything like it anywhere else. Can you tell me, possibly, have you guys seen a couple cities that do this? And maybe we can use a model for our own?
I wanted to address a different point first, if you don't mind. This teaching to the test baloney. This is corporate interests ruling the education system. And we see it all over the country, that there is corporate sponsorship of education. They are privatizing schools that are public. Right. And this is all the way from grade school up to college level. There are countries that provide free education up through baccalaureate and some even up through master's level because they consider it an investment in the future. But the corporate interests don't want bright, inquiring minds because we'll get it, that people will understand that it is not in our best interest, and they will push the corporations out. So that's the point there. Charter schools are a way for corporate... I'm sorry, I probably stole your thunder, but no. You can follow up on it. Corporate schools are a way for... charter schools are a way for corporations to step in.
You were
and
right
rule.
The first time.
Yeah. You got it. A Freudian
slip. The voucher system is also the same thing. I mean, everybody tries to say it's about choice and stuff like that. No, it's about privatizing schools. And so,
at least we
I mean,
laugh
it's an
about
important
it, you know,
thing.
Sometimes, for crying out loud. Unfortunately.
I'll tell you my one positive story, though. We were in Kennebunkport, and we were doing summer camp. And this was amazing to me. That we got up there and we had a bunch of people talking, and this school came in. I didn't even know these kinds of schools existed, but it was what I had been talking about across the country, and it took me to get to the East Coast to finally see. There's a place called New School, and the principal was amazing, and I thought, if I had a principal like that, I would have stayed in school. These are the people that we need that encourage kids to really... And what they did was they put together... They knew nothing about fracking or mountaintop removal, And so they went out with the principal for, I think it was a week or 2 weeks, with cameras and equipment, and they were in the woods in a field trip, and they put together probably one of the best documentaries
I've
seen.
That's beautiful.
They talked to people, and I'm trying to get a copy of that, so if this goes out to New School,
yeah.
Penny Bunkport, you need to get a copy of that to us and show
now,
everybody.
Yeah.
It was
now,
so good.
The majority of charter schools that I've seen are just siphons of money. They take money away from the rest of public schools, so on and so forth. However, there are a couple that are actually trying some innovative type things. So maybe completely getting rid of the charter school system isn't necessarily the best idea. Maybe if it's like limited to like experimental schools that are trying things that have a specific purpose to try different things with the intent of taking what they find and putting them into the larger school system, maybe that's a strategy where charter schools can be used responsibly rather than just being a money and resource suck from the rest of the school districts.
I attended a charter school during middle school, and for me it was actually a positive experience, even though it was kind of a resolve for some of the troublemakers in public schools to be sent there as an alternative so they could still be in school. The Turkish people that founded the school believed that high schoolers didn't have a high enough foundation in math and science, and it was part of the reason that I became so educated and so aware of my surroundings was because of my advanced placement in a local charter school.
But the public school should be doing. Sorry, but the public school should be doing that. We're looking at advancing charter schools at the expense of the public schools.
Right, exactly, and that's
taking
irresponsible.
Taking the budget money away because they can't support both systems.
Right, and so that's the whole point. Is that it maybe if we're just setting up like one or two that are basically sort of research and development for the education system at large, where when certain things are found to work, that they then are dispersed throughout the rest of the school system. Maybe that would be a responsible way to use charter schools. But you're right. I mean, I look at Cleveland and there's like a bazillion charter schools out there and they're all a waste.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wanted to mention something on Diane's comment earlier about and how you mentioned as well about teaching to the test too. And not, you know, I think there's one, another main issue that's within it that also maybe allows teachers to become in the public schools too or in both to become maybe a little more lazy, and it's the corporate interest in prescription medication that's applied to these students, like the Ritalin, the Adderall, at such young ages. You've got to be absolutely kidding me. Some of these students are hitting puberty at 10 years old because they've been on Adderall for 5 years. You want to talk about things that are damaging to your biological makeup and your cognition, things like that too. Again, you're teaching to the test. I'm too lazy to teach the kids. Well, let's just get them on some meds so they can pay attention.
All right, regurgitating facts is not critical thinking, and that's the thing that people need to understand, is that critical thinking needs to be taught in schools, not just facts.
Absolutely. That's a good teacher in itself, teaching kids how to think. Period,
so,
right there.
Question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a look at our classroom setup. What do? Kids sit down, and they look at one person that's standing up, and then they listen. It's authoritative setup. There's no dialectics. There's no conversation among students.
It's funny because I'm actually putting a video together right now. I interviewed 3 students before I left Pueblo, Colorado. I did grade school, middle school, and high school, and I got such a great amount of information that I'm putting together and working on the RV. But it's funny because when we went to Pueblo, we were sitting on a corner, and there were 2 kids came up, and I said, hey, do you guys like school? And immediately both, no. And if you ask any kid their favorite subject, it's PE or gym, because they're moving. The kids need to move, and
absolutely.
We expect them to sit for, six hours a day?
They're kids.
So I said to the two, I'm sure they were only 7 and 8, I said to the little boy, what would you take if you could just take anything you wanted? And he said, science. And so, and then the other little boy, I said to him, what would you do? And he said he would be an illustrator and poet. This kid was only 8 years old. Who knew he knew that name? And I said, don't let anybody stop you. You be an illustrator and a poet, and you take those courses. But guaranteed, those kids will not get enough of what they love. They don't get enough of what they love. We could build the math and the English and everything into the programs that they love. It would keep them in school. And we need to do more of that, too.
Each room was designated. Sorry. Taking you back to that school that I was telling you guys, it's in Houston. Each room was dedicated to either a Mexican theme or a Vietnam theme or something like that. So I mean, everything was
like their cultures, their cooking, music, anything that they could possibly do in that culture. The whole room was all about that. So they actually were moving, and that's another thing that I just wanted to touch on. I really would like to have another model for that. And
if Occupy you guys, school.
Yeah. Occupy the schools.
Occupy school.
Yep. I mean, it was
pretty amazing. I mean, when you learn how to cook in a different culture. So I mean, something as simple as that. I mean, it kept you interested.
Well, experiential learning, I think, is what you're talking about. Yeah, right. You know, and that's something where it's like, you know, people learn in different ways. Now,
it changes your perspective.
We can talk about this for quite a while, but I think that we need to move on to some to the idea of solutions. Of you know, what are some success stories that you've seen while on the road, you know, and you know, what are some things that maybe other areas, other occupies, and other communities can take the experience of and emulate.
I can tell you a lot of what's going on are community gardens, huge amount of community gardens going in, and schools actually participating in the growing of vegetables and finding out what vegetables are. And we have one at the Little Pebble House. There's a garden next door. We actually had a chef offer to teach cows. We have in Pueblo, they have a high obesity rating. And so part of what we plan to do is have these teachings where the vegetables are right next door. They get picked, they bring them over, and this person will show them how to eat healthy. So, you know, we talked about the fast food places in Akron. There are no home diners.
Mom and pop was
all McDonald's,
Wendy's,
Burger King. I mean, we were looking for a little mom and pop shop to support the local community, and there weren't any. So there are some good things happening up there. One is the community garden.
Lindsay's on Tusk.
Arcadia Grill, who we just love, right here in town. We had a big banner when we showed up. Amazing. Maria and the folks over there, big shout out to you guys, because that was really cool. But there are good things happening. There's a lot of barter system now. People aren't using money, so they're using their own either money or trading services. And so you're going to see a lot of that too. And good things are happening out there. I think we need to just be the change we want to see. And that's what I keep promoting. If we want a different school, then we need to create those schools. And I had teachers say they would come and teach for free if we occupy a school. Maybe that's the next step. Maybe we need to get ourselves a school.
I love it. I participated in Occupy University in New York City. That was what happened after the year anniversary, is just to prove that it was possible. Professors and subject matter experts came to the park and just gave classes, but it wasn't the conventional kind of class where everyone listened to the one person. It was a roundtable discussion. It was a true exchange of knowledge, because the fact is, based on studies, that you remember only 20% of what you hear, but 80% of what you say. So for true learning to take place, there has to be a dialogue. It can't be a one-way script. So I just wanted to speak to the success of Free University in New York City, and that it is possible for people who are passionate enough about teaching and people who are passionate enough about learning to do it in the real world.
Just one thing I want to add. If anybody hasn't read John Dewey and his theories on education, you guys really need to take a look at what he talked about, what he discussed. But the same thing you're talking about, Micah. Again, back to dialectics, just that group discussion, the conversation. That he harped on that more in the authoritative style all day.
And more on the subject of solutions and blending economy and food, you can make progress in both areas when you support community gardening and community-supported agriculture. It's known as the acronym CSAs, and they are growing all over the state. You make a community more independent by growing their own food, and you help the economy by keeping the money in the community. You grow by subscription. For those of you who don't know, you can look up further details, but basically, in a nutshell, the farmer needs to know in advance how many people are going to be buying and what their preferences are for particular, whether they want more leafy or root vegetables or more Brussels sprouts or whatever. And so you buy in advance before the season starts, and the farmer has the money to plant the crops. And then as you're growing through the season, they are harvesting, and people are coming, and they're learning, and they're saving money. They're keeping the business local, and they're paying a reasonable price and supporting the local small family farmer.
So that can be organized through like existing food co-ops.
Absolutely.
Then. So I mean, that sounds like, okay.
Food Not Bombs is an excellent one that's here in Ohio, I believe.
And even if they're outside of Ohio, I'm not quite sure.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. There's just one that just opened up in Kent not too long ago. I think that might be the closest one.
Does anybody know of a good place, information online, where you might get some information concerning how to set up a food co-op? Because that might be something that's worthwhile.
If not, we definitely need to look into it. That's a solution for sure.
We'll find some good online resources, and I'm sure you can post it at your website.
I was going to say, many of your listeners probably don't know about Monsanto and what's happening to some of the food. This is what has created the need for organic and real food, because Cargill, who owns Monsanto, so the same company that produces the pesticides, are actually genetically modifying the food. And there's now studies coming out that show that that's not a good thing for people.
And for our education system, to tie into what we're talking about, to get around these requirements they need to have for the schools to put out food that is deemed healthy, instead of putting the food in there, we just deem pizza as a vegetable instead, because that's apparently more healthy, than giving them the greens itself. We'll just say, hey, pizza's a vegetable now, so it's good for you. Go, we'll eat it. We'll serve it to the kids. It's fine, It's true. I mean, it's just sickening sometimes, but that's what we do. We just put a Band-Aid on it and move on. Actually changing.
And I think it does need to be pointed out that that Monsanto and all the other GMO GEOs out there in the world are enabled by the fossil fuel industry, with which they would not be able to function the way they do without. Just as a final note, because it's we're running way over, is just to say that. I've come to the conclusion, and maybe my good friends here in this booth agree, that the first modicum of freedom is when you are both energy and food independent. And I think that if we can strive to that, then we'll go a long way in not only freeing ourselves, but of also tearing down the power structure that seems to be so problematic for so many of us. And so...
Oh, man. I just want to thank the three individuals that came to visit us again today. Can't say enough about you three. I think like I said, me specifically, I'm just going to speak from the heart for a second. I just the apathy. I think you've instilled some energy that's needed around here, back in us, to meet some folks that are
thank you.
Out there grinding, is how I like to say it. But you guys, you just keep doing what you're doing. You're empowering.
Very empowering.
Yes.
And some of what they're doing today. T and Ellie, maybe you can help us.
Well, I just wanted to say that you guys can find their RV down at the Arcadia. It's going to be parked there. If you guys want to come out and ask questions, the Arcadia is a good place to go.
And definitely off air, I don't want to forget this. Definitely we have to exchange phone numbers. You guys are going to call in for sure, within the next few weeks. I would love to have you guys back on, too, and just get a nice little update. I would love it. Why not? That would be fantastic.
We'll live stream to you.
That would be fantastic.
That would be
awesome. We could set something up.
And then, we're going to do that GA and possibly a march if it... the weather permitting.
We can do a march in the RV. We've done it before. We will shut out the windows and we will give up the light.
And that's...
come on, we can hold 18.
And that's 12 o'clock at McKinley Monument, correct? And then a potluck
at
3:30, also at McKinley Park, right?
So come on down. Join us.
It's all weather permitting.
Indeed.
But we'll be there.
Well, we'll take it inside the Arcadia Grill if it's pouring.
Out, Canton. Come out. It'll be a good time.
Support local human beings.
Exercise your rights.
You guys are really awesome, guys.
Can we just sign out?
What?
Absolutely.
Yes, sign outs.
Hey, Micah here again. If you want to follow my journey through the jail system once I'm arrested by the military police, you can follow my story at Unoccupier. That is my Twitter handle, at Unoccupier. I have people that I trust running that Twitter feed when I am not writing it myself. I'm writing it myself right now, but when I'm in jail, they'll be running it for me, at Unoccupier. Thank you.
And this is Diane from Occupy the Roads team. I want to thank this wonderful team here for
Occupy.
Revolutionary
Idea.
Revolutionary, I'm sorry. It's all, as Shakespeare said, that which we call a rose by any other name is not sweet. So, yes, thank you to our hosts and to this warm welcome that Canton has provided us. We really enjoy being here, and we hope that we can help inspire some people with our presence. Please join us. Come down to the Arcadia Grill, and let's get empowered. Let's set this place rocking.
All right.
Nice. Hi, this is Janet Wilson, and ditto what Diane said. You can find us at www.occupytheroads.com or Facebook /OccupyTheRoads, and the Twitter is at OccupyTheRoads. So we look forward to friending you, liking you, whatever you choose to do. But
Revolution
follow
Radio
us.
With a zero. Come find it. We'll absolutely.
Our tour duty will start. It has started, but it will officially start in Philadelphia on the 10th when we kick off. And just so you know, Captain Ray Lewis, who's the retired police captain from Philadelphia, is now getting his RV ready, and so he will be kicking off with us on November 10th, 11th in Philadelphia. And before that, we're in D.C. for the 5th, 6th, and 7th. The 5th is the Million Man March. Then we're going to occupy the elections on the 6th, and then we're going to occupy Congress on the 7th.
And citizens' arrest.
So there's going to be a citizens' arrest of Congress because they're not doing their job, and also the Supreme Court, who are corrupt. Not all, but some. And so follow us. It's going to be very interesting, and we're going to try and live stream as much as we can. So we usually put that out on Twitter and Facebook. So
occupy!
Thank you for listening.
Fantastic. Occupy is strong. And for... I'm sorry, Dinelle, you had one last thing to say?
I was just going to say peace, love, and solidarity.
That's our rally cry around here.
All right, this is Tricky Dick for T-Nelly and Mike Check. Thank you very much for tuning in to Revolution Radio on Radio Free Canton 90.7. As always, you can find us online at radiofreecanton.net and also on Twitter and Facebook. Ooh.